This is Talk is Cheap on KPWLP 97.3 FM, Eugene Peaceworks Independent Community Radio and archived on radioforall.net, the Independent Media Center, the last of the Independent Media Center sites. So this week I have, this week and next week should be the Q&A from Encircle Films showing of What's Up Buttercup, very important film on healthcare, especially with what we are, the national focus here on how we're dealing with the onslaught of multinational corporate greed that is affecting our healthcare system here in Lane County and Oregon in general. So that's coming up here. First, let me give you just my brief brief commentary here. So I was wrong about China and $200 a barrel oil. So China, and I don't want to go into detail, I don't have time to go into detail, this would be a whole show on this, but you know, China is dependent on global trade and they don't have their own oil, so they have a lot of resources, renewables. They've gone heavy into renewables and to the point of making solar panels really cheap. So they've switched mostly to renewables because they don't have oil, but they still need oil because of globalization, because they need to be able to ship products that they rip off their labor and exploit labor in China and then send and then use cheap oil to ship that those products all around the world. And I will say for China, though, that so they stopped buying oil to keep the price of oil down, which nobody expected them to do that. And I got to say, awesome. This is what is awesome about China, even though they are a fascist regime, and we don't want them really to continue too much. You know, China has a history, my understanding, and please research this yourself. I don't have a direct article on this. But what I my understanding is when China did conquer throughout their thousands of year history, they've been doing this a while, they know what they're doing, when they would explore new countries and the new world, they would take scribes with them and take people to take down the information and the culture of the people that they were working with so that they could make a sort of symbiotic, a win-win situation with them, with China in the dominant position. But this is a more intelligent imperialism where you actually, and this is what they're doing with Belt and Roads too, they're not just going in there and raping people like Heart of Darkness, it's kind of exploitation light. So, but it's still imperialism and we still want countries to be self-sufficient. So, yeah, China, dependent on global trade, so they are going to, they've managed to keep the oil prices down, but that's not going to, you know, and you know, the press, I gotta say, the press has basically has played our hand, showed our hand, and just told everybody, you know, this is this is about the time that we're gonna run out of oil, so this is how long we can handle, we can weather this situation. And of course, Israel, but we can't, let me continue on, I'm not gonna directly blame Israel for all this, because it is the multinational corporate weapons manufacturers and oil interests that are causing this. And ultimately, Netanyahu is a pawn of those. So we've averted a disaster. They will still devaluate the currency, and your currency is still being burned up in wars, unnecessary wars with the wrong countries. And this is all kind of a sideshow that they don't want you to know that. This is why I want environmentalists and everyone, we should be concentrating on anti-war movement, and that's what, you know, the Poor People's Campaign, all this is really anti-war movement and anti-eviction defense is really what all, that's what we learned in the 70s with the Vietnam War is, and where there was a brief period there where we had a little bit less military spending and the economy took off. You know, every time this happens, the economy takes off. So we all know this. And I just want to say thank you, Iran. Thank you for standing up to the multinational corporate oil and militarist overlords using direct democracy and self-sufficiency, extreme self-sufficiency, and what must be grassroots organizing going on there. I have to. I hope you continue your heroic and noble effort in the campaign until globalization is ended for good, and the 1% are dismantled into an equitable society ruled by democratic confederalism, Keynesian economics, and kindness to the planet. Right? You might think I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. Okay, so coming up, What's Up Buttercup, and my usual shenanigans and surprises. Thanks for listening. Tell your friends, support independent media, and we really need your support right now, too. And I just did Growers Market needs members, so you will be hearing reports, a report, and all kinds of various wacky, great stuff from me in the vein of giving activists the ability, the information they need to go do their activism. Thanks for listening, support. Independent Community Radio.
Well, lots to think about from that film, huh? We're very grateful to have tonight's panel members with us and to be able to get the personal insights from local health care providers who have fought back against the corporatization of health care and won. Tonight's panel will be moderated by Gretchen Soderlund, Associate Professor and Area Director of Media Studies at the University of Oregon, and Gretchen will be introducing the four panel members. Following the panel, there will be time for a few audience questions. I would ask that you limit your questions to one and a question rather than a TED Talk, please, to be respectful of everyone's time.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you all for coming. First of all, I want to thank the filmmakers and the producers of this documentary for allowing us to see it pre-release. They thought that what was happening here in Eugene was so important that it was worth bringing the film to the community, and not just to Eugene, but Lane County in general. And as most of you know, Lane County has really been ground zero in the fight against corporate healthcare. Not only did about 10,000 people lose their primary care physicians a year and a half ago, when private equity was brought in to take over Optum in this community, which was a huge defeat for the community. But more recently, the Peace Health here in Riverbend decided to replace a local Democratic group of emergency medicine physicians with a corporate group out of Atlanta, Georgia. But what happened this time was different than what happened with Optum, because these physicians fought back. And all 41, not healthcare providers, all 41 healthcare providers, 31 physicians and 9 PAs, I believe, all refused to work for the Atlanta-based group. And this led to a pretty bruising couple of months, I would say, in which Eugene emergency physicians, along with the medical staff at Riverbend, really fought tooth and nail to get Peace Health to reverse this contract. It ultimately led to a court case, in which Eugene emergency physicians were asking for an injunction on the grounds that bringing in the Atlanta-based group, ApolloMD, violated Oregon's Senate Bill 951, which is a corporate medicine bill, anti-corporate medicine bill that was passed into law in 2025. And this was the first real test of that law. For those of you who followed this in the newspapers, you will know that this was a crazy court case. I mean, there were the corporate raiders out of Georgia perjured themselves on the stand. The judge, Casabai, said they had lost all credibility in his eyes. Ultimately, Peace Health backed down. They reversed their decision and they offered the contract back to Eugene Emergency Physicians. Thanks to these physicians and the help of the broader med staff at Riverbend. So tonight, we didn't know when we booked this venue whether EEP would exist tonight. But I'm really happy to say that we have three EEP emergency medicine physicians here. We've got Dr. Jeremy Brown, Dr. Bianca Jacobs, and Dr. Janina Best. And then we have Dr. Will Emerson, a hospitalist, and also the elected leader and spokesperson of the medical staff at Riverbend here tonight to share their stories. And I have some more specific questions for the four of you. But I just want to start, this was a film that, you know, they covered a lot in 80 minutes. They covered the emotional toll that medicine takes on physicians. They covered, you know, the multiple layers of interference, you could say, between physicians and patients. It covered, systematic abuses. And so I would just like, in round robin style, to hear from each of you, what aspect of this documentary resonated the most for you? And I don't know which order you want to start in.
I don't mind going first. So I think the thing that resonated most with me was actually what brought me to Eugene Emergency Physicians. In watching the film, I think, and hearing a lot of the physicians speak, a lot of us go into this because we truly want to help patients. And, I trained out on the East Coast at Vanderbilt, and when I trained there, you know, coming out of residency, there are many, many corporate managed groups on the East Coast. And so those were the main job opportunities on the East Coast. So they'd come to our residencies and they'd do these lavish parties and they'd try to recruit you to these groups. But I knew all along that going into medicine, I wanted to do this to help patients. I didn't want to be beholden to any other corporate entity or have to follow certain metrics in order to, to please the people above me. I just wanted to help the patients. For example, one of my residency colleagues who still currently works for a corporate managed group was telling me about some of the metrics that he has to behold in order to get the patients to the department. For example, one of them is how fast can you see the patient and then print their discharge paperwork. And so that's one of the metrics that they're held to. And I just found that I somehow found this unicorn group in Eugene Emergency Physicians, and I've always felt that. And we moved out here, and I waited a year because there were no positions available, and I knew I have to work for this group because this group is just, the entire group, everyone that I met within the group was very much focused on patient care. And I think that we've proven that through this entire 3 months that we've gone through, that this is something that we truly believed in. This fight has been scary at times and anxiety driving, and it's been difficult, but I said at the onset that this is something that I believe in, that patient-centered care is the most important and the best type of care. And so for me, that's what touched me the most about the film, was just talking about how important that is and why we've done this for the last 3 months.
Hey, I'm Will Emerson. I'm a hospital medicine physician, but currently serving as chief of staff. And when Dr. Best here referred to, we moved out here, we're married. So full disclosure. I think what struck me the most and probably the most pertinent to our situation at Riverbend and why the medical staff was immediately very concerned about this decision is before anything about the Senate Bill 951 or other issues with Apollo MD were known, the main thing and what was discussed in the film at one point was that the corporate medicine model with so many administrators and kind of siphoning the profits and sucking the blood, and it really does affect the ability to recruit and retain the best and the brightest, and especially in a community like Lane County, where we really rely on people who were born and raised here. I mean, a large portion of EEP has roots in Lane County and is from here. And then we also have to recruit nationally because we're not a city like Atlanta or the Bay Area or Seattle, where there's just physicians living in town because of married to spouses who work in different sectors in the city. So we rely on groups that are good to their physicians, stable, and are able to recruit and retain people. So to have a corporate group come in, there was an immediate concern on the medical staff that we would lose our stability, we would lose our quality, and all of that really decreases our ability to provide quality care to the community, which is what this is all about. So I think that that's the biggest concern from the medical staff, and what led to, you know, within 2 weeks of the decision, there was a 99% vote, the largest vote in the history of the medical staff, to reverse the decision. And then everything that's happened since then has all really come from that concern.
Hi, I'm Bianca Jacobs. I'm one of the members of Eugene Emergency Physicians. Watching that film, I think the thing that stood out to me the most, or kind of spoke to me the most, was the moral injury that we all in healthcare are facing, and the effect that that has on our lives. It certainly trickles into our home lives and our ability to kind of function as normal human beings. Jeremy mentioned that he worked overnight last night. I worked a few overnights earlier this week. So trying to deal with different challenges, physical challenges, and then on top of it, having corporations dictate how you're providing care is very difficult and demoralizing. I think we saw that locally a few years ago. One of our beloved primary care doctors and hospitalists died by suicide, Dr. Ross Schwartz. And I think that, you know, that happened shortly after the Optum takeover of Oregon Medical Group. And I think that speaks volumes to the impact that corporations can have on healthcare and healthcare providers. I think that one of the ways that we can fight back is to recognize the moral injury that we're all under and try to change it. I think, as they mentioned in the movie, trying to make our voices heard, and the medical staff at Riverbend have been excellent at that over the last couple of months. We've been outspoken and working hard to make sure that we can provide high quality care and that our goals of providing high quality care are known to administration. And we've seen some change over the last few months and specifically the last couple weeks in particular. So I'm hopeful that this is a move in a positive direction, and very thankful to the members of my group, the members of the community, and the members of med staff.
Dr. Brown. Hi, I'm Jeremy Brown. I'm another partner with Eugene Emergency Physicians. I think one of the parts of the movie that spoke most to me was the discussion of the role of private equity and the insertion of the middleman in the process, and kind of what benefit do they provide to the physicians or the patients or the care that's provided, and where does the money that they extract go? In the when Apollo MD was awarded the contract for our hospital, I organized with one of my partners, Julie Sayo, as well as other members of our group, and we started outreach to a lot of the state and local legislators and politicians. And this ultimately led to Dr. Sayo and myself testifying at a state legislative hearing with Senator Manning. I made statements in there regarding Apollo's structure, and based on the information that I had available, you know, what I felt was that they represented a private equity company. It was really interesting to see kind of how this played out. Apollo MD through their attorneys, made statements to our attorneys, and then our attorneys kind of reached out to myself and suggested that we probably shouldn't say that anymore, suggesting that we risked a slap lawsuit or that they could make some defamatory claim against us. They then explained this perspective. So Apollo MD is associated with a private investment company. They say that they're not a private equity company, although I can't tell the difference. And that this company that they're associated with, Venture Bridge, does not own Apollo MD. But in the explanation became apparent that what had happened with Apollo MD is that as they grew as a company, they effectively became too profitable, and that they needed something to do with the cash flow that they were generating. And so they founded Venture Bridge to manage the cash flow for investments for partners in this company. And it really makes you wonder, why is a physician staffing management company nationwide, they are very proud of how many sites they own, hundreds of sites, thousands of physicians, millions of patient encounters a year, and they make so much money that they don't know what to do with it, so they had to create a company to invest their money. And this is who wanted to staff our hospitals here in Lane County. The perspective, I think, to provide to this is our office suite that we run as our business. Most people have trouble finding it. It's the second floor of over in like Springfield. It used to be near the Sherry's, but that's out now. And we have one office manager, Beth, who we all love. And I'm just so proud of kind of the corporate model that we employ as physicians. The difference between that and kind of what we're up against when we're trying to fight back against Apollo MD, who has such an enormous and opaque business and corporate structure. Nobody can even figure out what their net worth is because they have such a myriad of incorporations in Georgia and Delaware. ChatGPT, or I don't even know what Google AI, when you search it in, suggested something maybe on the order of like $700 million net worth. And so it's just incredible to think about that our group of 31, 32 physicians and 9 PAs was able to fight back against that. But you really have to look at it wasn't just our group that fought back against that. It was because we were able to educate people on this topic. We were able to engage the media. We were able to engage state and local legislators, all the way up to governor, U.S. senators and representatives. The public became involved. The nurses became involved. Obviously, the med staff at the hospital became involved. And that's the sort of grassroots, bottom-up resistance that's required. And with the backing of the law through the processes of Senate Bill 951, without that, we would be here today individually, but we would not be here as Eugene Emergency Physicians to be able to provide care here in Lane County.
Actually, Dr. Brown, since you have the microphone, there was a question I wanted to ask you, knowing that you work only night shifts, and so I was wondering, what special patient challenges do patients who come into the emergency room at night face? And does this documentary in any way resonate with their concerns and, those concerns and problems that you see in the emergency room?
I think a special patient population that we see more of at night, or maybe more in a specific position. We see a lot of unhoused people in the area. And particularly that they're coming to us for multiple reasons. They undoubtedly all have underlying medical problems. The social stressors of being unhoused lead to complex medical problems. A patient that I worked with recently had a a type of infection in the bones in his foot. He had been seen, as I was looking through his chart, at our facility, at other facilities, innumerable times, with imaging that showed progressive, essentially, decay of the bones in his foot, but was not being offered a surgery for this for different reasons. And a lot of it had to do with the fact that in order to treat the infection in his foot, he would probably have to have a surgery, but he couldn't be, you know, discharged out into the community after that surgery, remaining unhoused and with substance abuse concerns. Really, the only solution for managing his care, the true cure to his disease in that process would be that he would have to remain in some sort of, I don't know, facility, hospital, et cetera, until it was treated. Looking through his records, you could look at the imaging. Every time we got an x-ray of his foot, there was just less bone in his foot because it was being eaten by an infection. I just said to myself, let's try something different than has been done the last, how many times, pushing towards talking to surgeon, hospitalist, starting him on antibiotics and putting him in the hospital. And now thinking about kind of how the film portrays like our healthcare system in the United States, I haven't followed up on his case. This was just recently, but I really don't know what's going to happen necessarily, because I don't necessarily expect that, the surgeons that would encounter him would have confidence that they could operate, and then that he would continue to receive appropriate care. They don't want to operate on somebody who's going to then just be discharged rapidly from the hospital, because they know that he's going to have a bad surgical outcome, and then that surgical outcome reflects on them as physicians and is reflected in probably like quality metrics. Similarly, like the hospitalist who would have him in the hospital afterwards would be trying to treat him to stabilize his other medical conditions. They would be getting pressured to discharge him from the hospital because maybe he's not receiving that acute care. Then looking at like the care managers who are going to be trying to think about what they would be doing with him, can they get him into a nursing or rehab facility? How long is the nursing or rehab facility going to be keeping him? So it's all of these little points of contact in his process through the healthcare system that there's going to be so much pressure to either, not do surgery, not keep him in the hospital, not keep him in a skilled nursing facility or rehab facility. And I feel like the physicians, each physician along the way is not going to be in control of those decisions. And they're going to be, wondering what can I do for this patient? How can we fix this problem? But operating in a system which is not asking that question.
Thank you. And I need to let you know I failed in one of my basic duties as moderator, which was to turn the timer on when we started. So I'm going to be relying on you, Christine, to tell me when we should move to audience Q&A. Dr. Best, the American Academy of Emergency Medicine was executive producer on this documentary and also helped foot the legal bills for your court case. And one of the things I noticed that they said, I think I saw this online, is that they've been fighting corporate medicine for decades, but what made this case, and sometimes successfully, sometimes not, but what made this case so different was that all of you as physicians stood together and said, this is worth fighting for, and we refuse to work for Apollo MD. Do you see this as a model going forward? How can physicians work together to make things better for patients and better for the doctor-patient relationship?
I definitely do, and we're actually seeing a lot of different groups who are currently going through similar situations that we've been through, reaching out to see, what was the blueprint? How did you all get through this situation and come out on top? And I think this is a nationwide issue. It's not just something that's happening here in Oregon. Like I said, where we trained on the East Coast, it's very difficult to find a group that's not that's privately run and, you know, that doesn't have different layers to it. I think for me personally, when we kind of set out to stand up against this entity, you know, I made a very conscious decision because I knew that we were going to be all in, especially with Will being chief of staff. And, you know, it took a lot of time away from our kids, time away from our family, and it was very all-consuming for the last 3 months. But again, it was because I truly believed in this cause, and it was worth something that we should stand up for. And, you know, along the process, we brought our kids along and told them, you know, why it is that mom and dad are a little bit preoccupied right now, so that they could see what it means to advocate for something that you truly believe in. And for me, that's that really is giving patients the best care that I can. And so that's why I decided to sign that document and stand alongside, you know, the 41 other EEP members. And again, I think I truly did find a unicorn group in EEP when I started 9 years ago. And I am so incredibly proud to say that I've stood with these guys for the last 3 months. And, you know, we stood up for the community. We stood up for the medical staff, for the physicians and the nurses that work at these hospitals. And I'm so proud of us.
Dr. Emerson, as chief of staff, given that you interface with, you know, you're a hospitalist, but you interface with all of the different medical specialties in the hospital, it seems that you're in a sort of you have a good vantage point from which to see, understand how corporate medicine imprints itself on the hospital at large. And I was just wondering if you could talk a bit about that, about, you know, hospital, the corporatization of hospitals, and also speak to, I think this was being used as an analogy, but a couple of times in the documentary, the phrase practicing medicine without a license came up. You know, suits are practicing medicine without a license. I wonder if you could speak to how that might be happening or have happened at Riverbend.
Thank you. That's a very of-the-moment question, it seems. You know, Peace Health is a not-for-profit corporation, so I've been in a kind of a corporate setting since I started at Peace Health, which is almost, well, I've been full-time now almost 10 years, and I do think that typically there is a bit of a difference. Maybe it's a regional difference more than a for-profit versus not-for-profit, but our hospital medicine group is unionized. It was one of the first physician unions in the country, which started right around 2014, 2015, around the time I was starting. And I think that that has given us some benefits in order to avoid some of the worst of corporate medicine. I think that when these national groups take over, there are even more disadvantages, both for patients and for the physicians in those models, because at that point, you almost think of it as how did someone describe it? Someone described it as like a mall food court. So it's like everybody's working there at the food court, but nobody works for the same people. Like, you have Apollo MD running the emergency department, you have sound physicians running the ICU, you would have maybe another group running the hospitalists. And at that point, no one works for the same group. Everybody, or many people, are like 1099 independent contractors, which means they have no employee benefits or rights, employee rights. And at that point, the corporations really control all of the incentives. So they say 30 or 40% of your income now is based on whether you meet these metrics for throughput or for spending less time with patients, seeing more patients per day. They cut staffing rates. So instead of having 8 physicians in the emergency department at a time, now you just have 5. and so they want people to see people quicker. And all of those things, you would think, wow, if there's only five people, maybe the patient should pay less, or maybe the doctor should make more for, but that's not what happens. They keep the money. So the corporations are billing the same, paying less, and then the money goes to, you know, Valor Bridge or wherever else when they don't have, they can't figure out where to put the money, so they make new companies. And I think that's what, it's just, there's so many middlemen and nobody knows who they are, but that's who's kind of making the rules and keeping all the money. And it's bad for hospitals, it's bad for physicians, it's bad for patients.
Thank you. Yeah. Dr. Jacobs, the main argument of the documentary, of course, was that corporate medicine has led to an erosion of medical care. And I was wondering if, in your experience as a practicing physician, if you feel on a daily shift by shift basis that that corporate medicine is a threat to your relationship with patients.
It is 100% a threat. I've, in the emergency department, we don't have to deal with prior authorizations, but we see the ramifications of that process on patients. I've had patients who have been denied, MRIs or surgeries. I had one patient in particular who was essentially 100% bedbound because the insurance company would not approve his neck surgery. And finally, when he came into the emergency department, his symptoms were so bad that he was taken to surgery the next day. And so we see the impacts that corporate medicine has. And I think our patient population is more vulnerable and sicker than, kind of the average person on the street. And those people have greater impacts from the corporate practice of medicine, from prior authorizations getting denied, from drug costs skyrocketing, from loss of insurance. Someone that I know who is self-employed and single in her 30s recently told me that her health insurance has become too expensive. And so together we talked about options for her care, but it's a challenge. It's a challenge for people. And we in the emergency department are going to see more of that given the recent legislation and changes to some of the models that are happening, premiums going up, drug prices going up. We see people that can't get their medications filled, that have, obviously procedures denied, and some people who are really choosing between being able to, pay their rent and pay for their medical care.
Thank you. Thank you. We can now open up the floor to Q&A. We have about 15 minutes, and I'm actually going to set my timer this time.
Hi. A practicing medicine without a license I'm also concerned about in response to all of these crises is Eugene has a lot of health consultants who don't even believe in basic biology, and I know people that they've harmed and killed in a number of cases, and some of the funding of this propaganda to attack the medical system comes from the same Koch brothers and others who are trying to dissuade interest in medical care altogether. So I know there's a movement in medical circles to try to push back against this, but I just wondered if you could talk about the conscious effort to dissuade trust in even having health care and how dangerous that is. And thank you tremendously for all that you've done.
I think that question is very broad and speaks a lot to I think something that Gretchen probably knows more about, which is media and the role of media and that impact that has on people's kind of on the wellness industry as a whole. In terms of practicing medicine without a license, I think there needs to be more enforcement of that, and people need to feel empowered to report people who are trying to make medical decisions for other people who don't have an active medical license.
Does anyone want to add to that, to Dr. Jacobs?
Maybe just an interesting comment. Just in the last couple of years, we have all seen kind of these unusual patient interactions regarding patient use of like different AI systems, which I think there's probably some role for. Patients just getting, you know, misled by trying to use AI services without understanding the basic medical premises of what it's telling them. I've seen plenty of examples of AI hallucinations, the concept that it can kind of create and internally verify false information, like outside of the practice of medicine. And then I've seen that reinforced by patients, you know, who come to the emergency department with a concern generated by that. I think that's kind of a little bit of a segue, but another interesting question of, you know, are technology companies who provide AI services, which then generate, in some ways, it's really hard to see it not as medical advice. You know, are they practicing medicine without a license, telling patients, you know, one thing or another? And some of the questions that the patients ask in regards to some of these can be very confusing because they're even providing, we have a couple of patients who have in some ways like come to the emergency department trapped in these hallucinations. And I think they've come in like repetitively with, you know, why am I taking this medication? Like this says this. And you're trying to like figure out like, well, first off, you know, how much am I going to address this, particularly myself, like in the middle of the night, trying to sort through his AI hallucination, you know, medical questions, but also then like having some empathy towards this and as far as trying to provide a little bit of education and, to help him kind of escape from this. So I think that your question probably wasn't about that specifically, but I thought that was just like an interesting example of like ways in which people can kind of get away with, you know, providing medical recommendations or advice without a license, and in ways that can certainly harm people.
Maybe AI hallucination will become the next new medical code, right?
Yeah, I'm just so proud of you folks in EEP, the way you fought back. You won a battle in the middle of a war, and I'm so proud of you as a member of this community. I just want to hope that you will join and how much you will join our movement to win universal health care in Oregon. And I'm part of Healthcare for All Oregon, and I've got a table out front afterwards if anyone wants to join up in our mission. But I think my question is, how much do you know about the Universal Health Plan Governance Board that's been appointed by the governor? And how do you think you can relate to that in the future? As the movie pointed out, you know, this thing that we call healthcare in America has been, has been snarled up in a big ball, and that governance board is trying to disentangle that to bring publicly funded universal care. And I just wonder if any of you are aware and how much you think it would help.
I think we, especially in emergency medicine, we run into a lot of patients that are uninsured or underinsured. I'm familiar with the group, but I'm not familiar with that board specifically. I think as physicians, and especially with the work that I did with the Senate committee, that, you know, they really just need people to come and testify, to bring their stories, to bring this information. So I think that physicians particularly, and emergency physicians in the patients that we see that are suffering from lack of services through underinsurance or uninsurance, you know, could provide support to that. I'm not otherwise familiar with the board specifically.
Yes.
First off, thank you for your service. Thank you for being here for our community. I'm aware that there is a contract for the next 3 years to preserve your roles as is. I'm hoping Apollo MD never tries to come back. Could you speak to any changes you've witnessed thus far as a byproduct of your action, and any changes that you're hoping to see in the next 3 years? Maybe even, is Peace Health attempting to change without the legislation as a byproduct of this?
I'm hoping that we can provide care, you know, for 3 years and beyond. I do think Peace Health is coming to the table. There have been a lot of administration changes and a lot of administration turnover that I think will bring some fresh blood. And I see the signing of our contract as kind of a renewal time, a time to kind of take a bigger look and see how and what we can do to make the care better for all of our patients. You know, we don't like to see wait times be long. Patients don't like it. It's not safe or healthy. You know, those are things that we're trying to work on, you know, using the space effectively. And I think with the results of the lawsuit and Peace Health coming back to us, I think there is kind of a renewed interest in working with us to figure out how we can best accomplish that goal.
Yeah, I think on a broader scale, one of the coolest things to see out of this whole process is getting to work with the legislators and seeing how Oregon has one of the strongest anti-corporate medicine bills in place. And now many other states are looking at us to create copycat laws to see what they can do to protect their patients in their states from this sort of thing happening.
Thank you. Oh, okay. We have time for one question, and then we will wrap it up for the evening.
Hi, I'm Kiana Kabuko. I also serve on the Human Rights Commission for the City of Eugene. I'm extremely thankful for all of your work and the community's support in that you've had behind you. The documentary mentioned that healthcare is a basic human right, and it mentioned the importance of the general population getting angry and speaking up. I was wondering, since you all mentioned the support of the community, the medical staff, and local legislators, what would you, or do you believe that the general community was able to make an impact on the decision made by Peace Health to reverse the original decision? And how do you think a continuation of community support can impact the number of physicians and providers we have in our area, which could increase healthcare accessibility?
So I think one of the biggest impacts that the community had on me personally was keeping me in the fight. And in terms of moving forward and looking forward, I think the impact that the community can have is to continue to engage with lawmakers so that we can strengthen this bill, and so that the lawmakers know that it is an issue and that we need to continue to focus on that. And I think moving forward, you know, looking ahead, trying to figure out where and how we can keep this from happening again, our state law was strong enough to keep Apollo out. I think there's some other areas that we can continue to work on in terms of strengthening it. I know there was there's some talk about involving hospitals in that legislation, you know, seeing how we can make sure that hospitals are not exempt from that corporate practice of medicine. So I think as a community, and as, you know, there are physicians here, continuing to talk about this and engage your lawmakers is going to be one of the most impactful things that we can do moving forward.
Any other comments on, do you want to add to anything that Dr. Jacobs said, any of you? And then,
so Kiana, thanks for coming here tonight. And I apologize, I don't remember your title, but obviously you work with Lane County Medical Society. You know, one thing that when you talk about how a community can grow its physicians, and I think Lane County Medical Society is a great example of that. It provides through their organizing like social events. They provide wellness programs. They do advocacy work on the state and state levels. You know, I was really thinking like all of the partners in my group, we often come to Lane County Medical Society events. We get to meet other people in the area. You know, we benefit from the advocacy and support. And I was thinking that if a group like ours is replaced by a national staffing company that uses out-of-state or locums providers, you know, those providers are going to be flying in, you know, working, leaving. They don't join and participate and cooperate and build the medical community in the area. And so the concept of a community, Lane County, but the smaller, you know, medical provider community, having people that live here locally really does matter. And so when we came, you know, when we were advertising the, thank you, Janina, the make local medicine, thank you, you know, concept, it really means a lot to practice here as a medical provider, to get to know your physician colleagues in the area, to understand, you know, who they are, see them in the community. And it would just be such a shame to lose those connections when corporations come in. They wanted us to work for them, but I think otherwise we're somewhat agnostic. As long as they could staff and fulfill the contract, they could do it with people from anywhere in the country that would not be participating in that community.
Thank you so much for coming out tonight. Thank you to our panelists. This was wonderful.
Hey, fella, with a million smackers and nervous indigestion. Rich fella eating milk and crackers, I'll ask you one question, you silly so-and-so. With all your dough, are you having any fun? What you getting out of living? What good is what you've got if you're not having any fun? Are you having any laughs? Are you getting any loving? If other people do so, can you have a little fun? After the honey's in the comb, little bees go out and play. Even the old grandman down home has gotta have hay. Hey, better have some fun. You ain't gonna live forever. Before you're old and gray, it's still okay. Have your little fun, son. Have your little fun. Go! $0.10. You know, the squirrels save and save. And what do they got? Nuts! Better have some fun. You ain't gonna live forever. Before you're old and gray, still okay. Have your little fun, son. Have your little fun.
Brought to you by Crazy Larry MD's Procedure Emporium, where they're crazy for your health care. Hi, I'm Crazy Larry MD from Crazy Larry MD's Procedure Emporium, where we're crazy for your health care. We guarantee to charge you only 100% of what your insurance pays after they pay it or whatever's higher with approved collateral. Come on down, we'll give you a free ride in my Bugatti. Our internationally sought surgeon will have you for dinner once you pay your bill. Free vasectomy by Rabbi Cutswell with every operation. This week's special, open heart surgery, just $50,000, sutures not included. At Crazy Larry MD's, call for the latest location. I'm crazy for your healthcare.